Jeremiah's Bell, written by Denzel Myrick and read by David Monteith.
Prologue. The old woman stood on the jagged promontory, the strong wind catching her plaid shawl, sending it flapping round her shoulders. She drew it over her bony frame as she shivered in the late autumn chill. The sea was pale green, almost luminous in the gloom of the day. A storm had hit hard the previous night, and high above, its tail was curling like a celestial whip ready to crack its full wrath against them once more before the next dawn. In the distance, a fishing boat struggled through the turbulent swell, a determined prow cloaked in the white crash of waves, the safety of port still to be gained. The silhouette of a lone gull rode the gale almost motionless under the pale glimmering disk of a shrouded sun. Framed by it, the bird hung like a dark crucifix in the lowering sky, the absence of benediction. The thrash of the tide crashed over the barrel rocks, calling to the ghosts of the many mariners who had perished on them through the ages, a desperate lament for the departed, ripped from the world like leaves from an autumnal bough, lost souls never to settle or rest, but to rot, unremembered in the turbulent depths. She hefted the bell in her right hand, and with no little difficulty swung it to and fro. This was far from a call to prayer, more like the summoning toll to children at play in the schoolyards of long ago. Its peal caught on the wind, and the modulated chime cried plaintively against the tumult all around. Nonetheless, three figures stirred against the dark rocks and the washed lime sea, their ears long since attuned to the urgency of its call. Slowly, begrudgingly, they turned in the direction of the bell's insistent demand, swaddled arms laden with driftwood bleached white like old bones by the unforgiving, wuthering wind and waves. Satisfied, the old woman let the bell swing loose in her bony hand, then turned for the weather-beaten cottage across the rocks and beyond the dark rampart of seaweed which had been forced into the cove by the sheer ferocity of the storm. Here it would stand sentinel before the low dwelling until the spring tides and warmth of the sun ate away at its wasted, rotting edifice. She trod on, her worn boots sinking into the black, soft cleft of the weed, until the rough shingle afforded surer footing. A brief turn of her head was enough to register the lurching shapes close together in her wake, quite indistinguishable now, slouching forward almost as one foul beast, headed for an ancient little town. Chapter 1. They were all there, at least those who had taken the trouble to say goodbye to the man now encased in the wooden casket. Old friends and new, faces from the past and the present. Hamish was huddled in a voluminous black woollen seafarer's pea jacket. Suddenly he looked frail and old in a garment that seemed to draw what little light there was from the grey sky, and hid an off-white shirt and a badly knotted black tie. Beside him, Annie took a handkerchief from her handbag and wiped tears from her eyes. Though she was dressed brightly, she refused to wear black. Her heart was stifling sore. Brian Scott's dark suit did nothing to hide the neatly laundered collar from which his wife now banished a dark mote blown there by the gusting wind. His hand darted to loosen the top button of his shirt, but a look from Ella was enough to make him withdraw it hurriedly. He stared into his wife's blue eyes behind the short black veil of her hat and gave her a weak smile. She whispered something into his ear and clutched his hand hard enough to help him choke back the tears that were making his throat ache unbearably. Carrie Symington stood at the head of a rank of police officers, all dressed in their best uniforms, white-gloved, heads bowed. The gold braid on her cap caught a shimmering shaft of sunlight that faded as quickly as it had arrived.